Today we're going to talk with Jay Vine. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, today, welcome back to the podcast, Mr. Jay Vine of Alpecin Phoenix. We spoke to Jay a couple of months ago at this stage, and Jay was the Zwift Academy winner who got a one-year World Tour contract with Alpecin Phoenix. So we decided in the course of that conversation to catch up and do a little bit of a life as a Neo Pro section with Jay every now and then. So this is our first installment, catching back up with Jay. His debut race was the Tour of Turkey, and it went absolutely incredible. Couldn't have went any better. Mammoth ride on the Queen stage from Jay, and was one of the most entertaining summit finishes we've seen in a race in a long, long time. So it's great to catch up with Jay again. But before I jump into that conversation, let me just remind you about Patreon, because Patreon's the way we fund the podcast. Patreon is what keeps it ticking over week after week. It funds all our back end costs and allows us to expand the podcast behind the scene. We've huge plans for the podcast, including, and I'm happy to announce, I know I've been a bit sporadic this week with the podcast. That has been a big taper going on. I'm tapering for the Giro, because the Giro starts tomorrow, and I'm back daily for the Giro d'Italia, checking in each stage. And I'm sure we'll have some riders join us along the way for their feedback on the stages. So I'm really excited for the Giro podcast, and to help keep this sort of content coming, please head on over to Patreon. The link is in the bio. It's patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. So, without any further ado, let's welcome back to the Roadman Podcast, Mr. Jay Vine.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Jay, you've joined the elite club of guests that have been on more than once now. I think there's you, Tyler Hamilton, Pete Stettina, and I think that's it. I think they're the only two Petes we've had.
Oh, all right. So is this like a new thing to get repeats on, or am I just one of those lucky few that you invite back?
You know what? Guests are normally boring as fuck, so we just no one wants to hear from them again. So we're like,
fair enough.
Nah, it's honestly, it's just one of those things where you know, there's so many interesting stories out there that I typically haven't reached back out. And then on the other end, you know, people are busy as shit a lot of time, and I know. You know, the myth about how busy pro cyclists are versus how busy you actually are is probably different.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like you're either on and you're maxed out training, recovering, and just trying to crawl your way through life, or you're doing it easy going into a race and you're struggling to keep yourself occupied because, you know, every other week of the year, you're trying to maximize all your training, and then going into a race, it's foot off the gas, trying to recover and freshen up for it. It's so bizarre.
And I know when, like, even at amateur level, doing a stage race, for me, I get after the stage race, I call it the post stage race blues, where you're used to being, you know, in the break, there's crowds, there's motorbikes around you, there's car horns going all day long, motorbikes trying to pass you. And then you get back home the following day and you're just like sitting at the kitchen table, your girlfriend's gone to work, you're just drinking coffee on your own, there's no car horns, you're like, this is weird, there's no soigneur to carry me bags up the stairs, I have to do my own laundry. Do you get that kind of buzz off it as well, where it's a little bit of a low after a stage race?
Not really. Like, I guess back in amateurs, yes, but after Turkey, I didn't really get that because, I mean, it was a shocker. It was probably close to 15 hours to get back here. So the day after the stage race wasn't really a come down. But then because Turkey was probably was the longest I've ever raced for, I was okay to have a couple of days just chilling. You know, watching, I think there was a couple of other races on TV as well. So watching more bike racing and just getting my vibes off the TV a little bit. Like I said, my big struggle was going into the race, because you know, in Australia, our racing's only about 3 days. You know, we're talking 400, 500 TSS for 3 days, maybe four stages. So you don't need a taper. Like, you just rest day the day before after doing your week of training and you go into the race. Whereas this, knowing that it was going to be 30 plus hours, I actually had to take the foot off the gas for 3 or 4 days before the race. And you're just waking up at 7:30 in the morning going, cool, I've only got 90 minutes. Oh, okay. What do I do for the other 12 hours that I'm awake for?
So what are you doing? Are you just chilling out, watching Netflix, hanging out with your girlfriends?
Yeah. So I guess, trying to walk around, explore a little bit, but there's only so much you can explore in a 3 kilometer radius around your apartment because we don't own a car. And I'm not one of those people who sees the value in going and buying a 12 euro bowl of porridge with some flowers on it from a local cafe.
You're talking about La Fabrica there, aren't you?
I'm not going to name any names about that, but I'm not that kind of guy either. So yeah, there's a couple of cafes around here, you know, it's like a $1.50 for an Americano. And I'm quite happy just to sit out in front of a cafe in the sun for 2 hours just talking. So stuff like that, I guess.
Where's the good cafe in Girona at the moment? Where are you drinking your coffee?
La Taverna, over in the square across the river from where I am. That's where I've been going. It's just across from my bank as well. So
happy days. Cash those checks.
Days, yeah. Cash those checks, yeah. But just they're cheap. They do good sandwiches as well. It's like 6 euros for a 6-inch sandwich. So yeah.
Hard to be. I actually might get over in the next couple of weeks because we've some weird travel restrictions, but Spain isn't on the list. I might get over and just do the old COVID test before I leave, COVID test when I land.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Spain desperately wants money from up north. So they're just like, oh yeah, please come any time you want to come to Spain, come spend your euros in Spain.
Talking about Tour of Turkey, what is a TSS requirement for something like that?
So I think I ran it out. So let's just ignore the 70K Kermes on day one stitch up. But the actual week, the 7 days from Monday to Sunday, that was, I think it was 1300 TSS.
Oh, that's big.
It's, yeah, pretty big. But when you take into context that stage four, the stage one, two, and three, they were wanting me to really to put myself out there and try and help the team as much as I could in the sprint. So that was at the start of the race, controlling moves, making sure that 10 guys don't go up the road. So for the first hour, I was like doing crazy anaerobic surges. The middle part of these bike races is really active recovery. And then the final 10 through to try get to 3Ks, but 10 through to 4Ks, I was there at the front of our train trying to hold position as much as I could.
And what's that so threshold? Days, is that threshold or is it higher?
It's when you get pushed into the wind, it's higher than threshold. So, I mean, they're doing probably 105%. Going into that 3 or 4 Ks, and it just gets gradually higher and higher and higher. Like I think there's a clip of me on stage three, and I did like 600 watts for 90 seconds. And I was like in the saddle, out of the saddle, in the saddle, out of the saddle. And the guy next to me, he's probably like an extra 20 kilos just sitting in the saddle, just grinding it out. I'm just like, this is just not fair. Like, can we just put this on a bit of a...
And what's it, speaking of getting knocked out in the wind, what was the reaction in the peloton to, you know, I'm sure you're going to shake the tag really fast after performances like Turkey, but essentially in the first race you're the Zwift guy going in?
Yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, no one had any idea who I was. So I was just another one of the Alvesen guys, which was good. Like having that jersey, it shows respect. Like it has respect in the peloton. I think we basically have a world tour type respect in a peloton like that. But yeah, there was a couple of Bardiani guys that kept trying to take my wheel every chance they could. But yeah, apart from that, it was really fine, to be honest.
And what's the dynamic like in the peloton? Are you noticing? I had on, he's an Irish lad and he rides for the American Conti team. Is it Wildlife something?
There Wildlife, yeah, yep. Yep.
Yeah, so yep. He was in the break on the Queen stage, which we'll get into in a minute, where you had a great ride. But he was just saying, obviously, the Conti teams just get treated like shit in the peloton, and he's just getting chopped up and abused basically for the day.
Yeah, I must admit, the World Tour teams do take control of the peloton, and if you're in the way of a group of three of them trying to get to the front to do their job, they'll move you out of the way. Like the glamorous gentleman's sport of cycling isn't really gentlemanly when you've got angry Brits and Eastern Europeans abusing you to get out of the way.
And was it weird for you? Because obviously you missed training camps and stuff with COVID restrictions with the guys. So what's that dynamic like when you get to meet the guys?
It was pretty weird. Like it was weird in a whole bunch of different ways. Not only not knowing any of the guys going in, but also I think they'd heard that I had good numbers and all that sort of stuff. But to top it off, we lost three guys all on the same day on stage four. So we're down to four guys, and we've got Jasper Philipsen, who's been on the verge of winning a stage 3 days in a row. And all of a sudden they're getting told, okay, we're going to ride for Jay now on stage five. It was a weird dynamic, but I think they full on, you know, and to the DS's credit, full on trusted what had been told to them and went, okay, well, this is our job. We're riding for Jay, regardless if he's the Zwift rider or not.
So they're just full out. Like I've a manager for my amateur team at the moment, and he used to be the director for the Aqua Blue Sports Pro Conti team. But he'd always say to me, like, there's a word that comes before cycling, and that's professional. It's professional cycling. The dudes are just straight up professional. They're told to do, you're looking after Jay. They just look after Jay, even though they don't know you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jasper Philipsen was the last person to drop me off with 7Ks to go. Like, I'm pretty sure Mark Cavendish bailed with 20Ks to go. So, it was pretty surreal. 5 days in, 800 kilometers with these guys. From day one, my big job of the day was, all right, I'm going to take jackets and gloves back to the car, which I ended up dropping one of Jasper's gloves. Sorry, Jasper. But from that to, all right, we're riding for you to get a good placing on this climb, that was, pretty awesome.
That's amazing progression inside. Progression in the trust of the team as well inside, one stage race. Have you got a sense of, like, anyone on the team you're mates with already? Who's the joker on the team, or is it too early to tell kind of the dynamics?
Yeah, I think it's a bit too early. Like and we also lost three guys as well. So, and there's only one repeat rider coming to my next race. So it's going to be weird. I think you get to joke a bit more and you get to do all that sort of stuff on training camps. Yeah. I mean, between racing your bike, which you're not really joking about, because it's basically a controlled crash all the way from start to finish, like in the peloton. Like there is a bump and a possible crash somewhere in the peloton every minute. Like, not even kidding. There is someone trying to avoid a wheel, avoid a cross up every minute. You just don't see it on the overhead on the cameras. So outside of that, outside of not getting peed on the side of the road, outside of, getting snotted on, getting water bottles and gooey stuff coming back through the bunch, sweat, you don't have much time to joke. And then getting instructions over your headset, there's not much time to joke there. You're then from the finish of the race, jamming down some food, rushing off to the hotel to eat some food after that. You sort of got about 90 minutes after the stage finishes to shower, relax, just de-stress a little bit. So you're not really wanting to chat. Then you're into massage. And then 20 minutes after you finish your massage, you're into dinner. And you're in a big room full of all cyclists, just trying to shovel food down their neck. And then straight after dinner, we're talking 7:30, 8 o'clock, you're into a team meeting for 30, 40 minutes, and then you're sort of done for the day and wanting to go to bed. So there's outside of probably 30 minutes, 40 minutes pre-stage in the bus waiting for things to happen, you're not having deep political conversations with your teammates, that's for sure.
Yeah, I get that. It's a strange sort of Groundhog Day that definitely a lot of people don't see. Let's talk about the Queen stage, because obviously you'd been on the podcast, so I was keeping an extra eye out for you on the Queen stage. And I didn't know the result. And I was actually, do you know what? Some prick texted me that listened to the podcast and he said, unbelievable from Jay Vine. And I was like, you prick. I was about to sit down to watch the highlights. And so at that point, I didn't know if you were in the day's break or if you won the stage but obviously I was like picking you out. You held your position brilliantly into the base of the climb. The boys, I think they dropped you off 5-6K around that, if I remember.
Yeah, I think just over 7K to the bridge, and that was when Jasper left me. Yeah. But yeah, I was like 20th wheel at that point. So it was like really good.
Yeah, and you seem to be able to hold your position super. Like, I'm totally in awe of that. And I think a lot of people listening to the podcast that maybe haven't raced, that's a bit they miss. They think you just, you know, you ride into the bottom of the climb easy and you hold your position. But that's super difficult to do and it's stressful.
Well, yeah, like so I think 40Ks out from the finish, there was a left-hand turn through a town, and the town was literally, we went from big highways, you know, three lanes with verges on both sides into this town where it basically went single file over. The Belgians, they call them clinkers, but they're paving stones. So we went into that, and if you went too far on either side, you'd basically ride into drainage gutters with trash all through them. So you basically went two, maybe three cyclists across. So we had to fight all the way into that. So about 3 kilometers before that point, so we're talking 43Ks out, we're fighting for position. We then go through the town, and then we're on a barely two-lane road for the next 27 kilometers to that 7Ks to go point, or that 12Ks to go point, and we're fighting the entire time. Like, yes, we've lost 30, 40 riders that weren't trying to compete for the stage win anyway, but there's still 100 riders there all fighting for the first 30 positions, and that we close to 30 to 40 minutes is just full of not pedaling, 400 watts, not pedaling, 400 watts, coupled with you've got two or three guys all around you trying to chop you, not on purpose, but just slowly moving through the bunch. And if you're not moving forward, you're going backwards.
I love that saying. I was just about to say that. It's so true in those situations.
Like, mentally, before you've even got to the point where, right, I just have to do my best wattage for the next 30 minutes against these other professionals, you're already mentally screwed.
It's fucking stressful and it's dangerous and it's, you know, it's months and months of work, and then you're on a knife edge of, I could hit the deck here and break my collarbone.
Well, but it gets even better, and it happened in this race. You've then also got to factor in the fact that you can't be dropping any rubbish or bottles. So if you need that last gel, you got to make sure that it goes back in that pocket. If you try and give it to a car and they drop it, you get you get 30 seconds taken off you, which is what happens to one of the X guys. I think Charming, no, not Charming, the guy that overtook Charming from X on that stage passed off a gel wrapper. It got dropped by one of the motorbikes. He was penalized 30 seconds. So after all that stress, all that effort, 30 seconds, he ended up going from fifth place on the day to, well.
But it's like the UCI, like there's, you know, we've got the crazy, like downhill sprint finish, as we say in Tour de Poland last year. We've got, you know, inequality between men and women in terms of pay. We've got, you know, all these number of different dangerous practices going on, and they go after like littering and the super tuck. Like I've literally never seen a crash from the super tuck, and the littering, you know, it's obviously a problem, but there's bigger problems you can bring. Like they sweep up after a lot of the races as well. Plus you can get cool biodegradable gel wrappers.
Yeah. And I mean, like I'm not for littering, but at this point, are you worried about rider safety? In which case, like a guy trying to shove a water bottle on top of already full pockets whilst they're on a two-lane road with potholes, crashing and bringing down half the bunch because he didn't want to throw a bottle and lose 30 seconds. Like, is that worth it for the UCI? Or do they want to, put a litter zone in the last 10Ks, just dump your shit on the side of the road, we'll pay an extra... We'll take 5% off the prize money, which they already do. They already take 12% off the prize money. We'll take another 5% off the prize money. It's no skin off our nose. And pay someone to go through and clean up all that rubbish in the last 10K. Like,
they're so out of touch with it. It's like someone running the UCI and coming up with these rules has never like raced, never, you know, talked to anyone who's in a race. They're just so out of touch with, they're like rules that when I have conversations with buddies who are sort of into cycling, but you know, they've done one or two sportifs and they watch the Tour de France and they don't really know about cycling. It's the sort of suggestions they have around rules, and you're like, well, that would never work. And I don't even want to have this conversation because it's so stupid, you don't even know what you're talking about. It feels like that's where the decisions are coming from. They're bizarre.
Yeah, like for sure. If the guys in the breakaway on the front of the bunch, on the front of the breakaway in Tour of Flanders, pulling a turn, and he gets his bottle and just drops it right next to him into the path of the riders behind him. Yes, that's unsafe, and there should be a penalty there. But, you know, there should be some discretion. I thought that was the good thing about cycling. There was discretion in the rules, but it seems like they've decided to put discretion where it favours some riders, but disfavors others.
But even the way, was it Liège Carapaz was disqualified from? So he's retrospectively disqualified, but disqualifying him there, he still impacted the race. Like, he's up the road. People have to organize and chase him, and Ineos now have a tactical advantage with someone up the road. And then you disqualify him after the race. It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, and it also goes back to, well, he was disqualified for doing that in that race retrospectively. So we've already established that we can retrospectively disqualify people. He was doing that in Catalunya. So do we disqualify him from the Catalunya results? He also, who won Catalunya? I think it was a 1-2-3 for Ineos.
Yeah.
He affected the race in Catalunya. Do we disqualify their results? Like, where do we draw the line, UCI? And
It's too nuanced when you start disqualifying people retrospectively, because then you're like, you know, national alliances, you know, you're getting a benefit because of, you know, a fellow countryman up the road. Like, you know, it starts getting too textured. It's ridiculous. It's either you've got to pull them out of the race right there, or else just have a rule that makes some fucking sense. Anyway, let's talk about
tourist. I think to be honest, with the littering, surely it can't be too hard for a rule to be put in that within 2 years, nutrition companies need to bring out biodegradable wrappers. Like,
well this is my problem
that,
with it because
that would be a good, like Formula One bring in rules that in 2 years' time, we're going down an engine size to be more economical. Why not do that?
And it makes sense because it's now put the problem into, it's become an industry problem where there's a monetary incentive to solve the problem, where now we start to innovate because we know this rule is coming along rather than just turning a blind eye to it. Because you're not going to disqualify guys in amateur races. And, you know, I know pro is the shop window, but if we're talking big data numbers wise, you know, there's hundreds of races all over every country every weekend. Littering is a bigger problem at an amateur level, but if you have, you're not going to stop amateurs littering because there's not enough eyeballs to disqualify them. So if you have the biodegradable products, bottles, it's just a much better solution.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about this finish for Queen Stage and Tour of Turkey, because it was one of the classics from the last few years. Tour of Turkey has knocked out some crazy finishes. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch Ilio Kaisa's finish in the Tour of Turkey from a few years ago.
I got a funny story about that. I actually, so it's a real moment. So after stage six, so the evening of stage five, I had his win recommended to me by the YouTube algorithm. How did the YouTube algorithm know that I would be wanting to watch that? Anyway, recommend me that finish. And I actually got to talk to him the following day about that. And funny thing, he's just like, I was just like, that would have been an amazing feeling. And he's just like, yeah, would have been better if I hadn't crashed.
Like, it was such an amazing, and I'm not sure which version you heard, but the Eurosport version, I think it's Carlton Kirby's doing the commentary. And the idea of impartial commentary just went out the window, because the last couple of hundred meters, he's like, go on, my son, go on, my son. And then he shouts at the end, cycling fans across the world, rejoice.
Not very impartial, but I don't think anyone could have been impartial in that moment.
It was brilliant. But I don't think your one wasn't as good as that, but it was super, super exciting. It was like a three-man slow bicycle race coming into the finish. Talk us through, you know, your sensations, what's going on in your head for those last few K.
Oh, like it was a roller coaster. So I'd researched, I'd watched, I think they did it in 2017 and 2013 or something. So I'd watched those two climbs, and essentially you just have to wait until the last three Ks. If you're there in the last three Ks and you're able to follow moves, you've got a good chance of getting a good result. We also had the added factor that it was a block headwind going into the finish. So I think it was, if you did the it was a block headwind straight finish. So you'd go into the tailwind and get a massive run up into the next hairpin. But the moment you came around the hairpin, it was just wall. So when Charming went with like 19, almost 2Ks to go, and he attacked. I think I was fourth wheel, and I saw Kudos from Astana go with him or try to go with him. I was like, there's no way. If he can hold that to the finish line, there is no way that I'm ever going to get any close to that. So I just basically started riding my own race. And for the 30 seconds there, I thought, right, for third's the best I can do, fine. Third's the best it's going to be. But when you start slowly bringing someone back, obviously that glimmer of hope of, oh, shit, we're 1,500 metres to go and I'm back to Kudos now. Oh, Charming looks like he's bogging down a bit here. There's no one else in sight. This could be an opportunity here. But whilst all that's going through your head, your lungs are screaming, your legs are screaming, and you're wanting to do more to get it to finish quicker, but you're also not wanting to, you know, give your other riders an advantage by taking the win, because it was a block headwind at that point.
So were you up in your power when he went away from you guys, or did he fade?
So we'd actually, we basically kept a consistent pace. So he completely faded towards the end there. So much so that I nearly clipped his wheel in the last 300 metres. But, like block headwind. Like I think I was doing 400 watts on the wheel, which means it's probably 450 for those guys, for me to be doing it on the front. So we're talking like nearly 6.5 watts per kilo at that point at altitude. So you can only do that for so long. And the acceleration that he put in, he would put himself into massive oxygen debt when he accelerated away.
So he must have rode away at 7+ watts per kilogram to open that gap.
Must have been over 7 watts. Like just the speed that he kicked away at and then kicked again when Kudos was on his wheel was just incredible. Like, and that's why I literally went, wow, if this is pro level, what am I going to get when I, like, what was it been like when Froome was attacking with, you know, 2Ks to go in 2016? Like, that would have been ridiculous. Like, what is he attacking at? Like 9 watts per kilo for 4 minutes? And turns out, no, it's everyone's human.
But are you looking forward now to pitting yourself against, you know, with respect to the lads, they weren't the biggest names in the sport. Are you looking forward to pitting yourself against, you know, the Froomes, the Remco Evenepoels, these guys?
Well, see, I've looked at the numbers and there's not much higher that you can go from there. So that to respect the guys, the level was pretty high. I'm actually looking forward to racing at a decent altitude. That's what cooks me on that climb. Like it was just so crazy that I think I essentially did 5.6 watts per kilo, 22 minutes.
Oh, and
by the end of it, I was just on the side of the road, panting, just could not function for about 5 to 10 minutes. The following day, we did 22 minutes, 5.6 watts from like 20 meters all the way up to 900 meters. Nose breathe. Like the altitude had such an effect on that bike race that it just astounded.
And is that something you're starting to think about? Will you look to get altitude exposure? Will you sleep in an altitude tent? Do you see a benefit in either of those?
Oh, absolutely. Like there's I've never done anything like that. So where, yeah, if we're going to be seriously looking at doing altitude finishes, high mountain peaks, stuff like that, I'm definitely going to be investing in that sort of time. Like with Andorra just up the road as well, it's definitely on the cards. That plus, I mean, we're getting blood tests basically every month. So we're watching the hematocrit levels and all that sort of stuff. So we've got a baseline now to work with. Just stuff that you don't need in Australia because the highest we race is probably 1300 meters.
Yeah. Wollonga.
Yeah. Yeah. At what is that? Below sea level over there.
So what's next target?
So next I'm off to Route du Sol. So that's I think on the 18th in Spain. So it's sort of a home race, I guess you could say. There was a couple of real big hitters on the start line a couple of weeks ago. Valverde was one of them. And I think Fulstang was also down, but since the start list got published, they've been pulled off it. But Miguel Angel Lopez is the big one from Astana. So we'll see how he's going. But there's a bunch more World Tour teams at this race. So, and World Tour teams with world-class climbers. So it's going to be different to Turkey. And the climbs, once again, they're not as decisive as Turkey. The thing we found out, me and my coach, big time at Turkey was, you know, climbs of 5% for 4Ks, climbs for 6%, 10% for 2Ks. In Australia, that's a hilly, hard day where the bunch is strict. You got 5 guys going to the finish line.
Yeah.
At this level, sprinters, Mark Cavendish and Greipel are getting over that.
This is the part that I'm always amazed with. And there's races, you know, local enough to Ireland, especially in the UK. There's one, the Lincoln Grand Prix. And I remember Mark Cavendish, it's a hard one-day hilly race. If you're an elite amateur and you got to race Lincoln, like it's a fucking hard day out. I remember Cavendish going to that a couple of years ago, or they have the national champs course on it. Like, you know, a sprinter, and he's winning like hard, hilly, one-day races. And yeah. It's when you step down a level, you just realize how good these guys are all around that everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, it was weird. Andre Greipel actually did more of the turn than even Jasper did into the stage five climb. I think he got Seb Berwick within like 6 Ks or something of
he's
the finish.
A beast.
And he's enormous, like 85 kilos. If I, like, the wattages are just insane, but they are just so tough. Like, some of the finishes where I'm playing around at the front with some of the Astana guys trying to get a breakaway into one of the finishes. Some of these climbs are 2Ks at an average of 6% with some 8% pinches in it. And you see the sprinters like Cav, Greipel, their lead out guys like Zabel, big units, they're like 20 wheels deep in the peloton. And they're still there. It's like you need 10% gradients for serious amounts of time to split bunches like this.
It's got to be pretty cool to race with Cav because it's most probably his last season. And, you know, for anyone who's a bike fan, whether you like his personality or you don't, he's been maybe the dominant sprinter of all time. So it's pretty cool to share the peloton with him as, you know, his swan song year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get to race with him twice so far. Andalusia is on the start list for that as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool actually being at the race as well, as even though he beat Jasper, seeing him get his win back to his winning ways at that race. Like, he was the guy that, the first rider that, like, stepped into my eyes back when I first started watching cycling, like, at the Tour. Like, he's, yeah, basically the guy that really captured my love of the sport. When I first started.
And you know what? Plus, he's a super nice guy. Like, I don't know him, but I met him. I was at a track camp with the national squad last year in Mallorca, and Cav rocked in, and he's like, "Do you mind if I get some track time?" But he was just, you know, other World Tour riders would occasionally rock in, and they'd kind of assume they were getting track time, and they'd prioritize themselves in the rotations and stuff. Cav's just so courteous, waiting his turn, like taking time to take pictures with everybody, chatting with everybody, like he's one of the guys. Just a super humble, down-to-earth guy for, you know, such a rock star.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, 150 wins, second most wins at the Tour de France. Like, that Palmares, I don't see it being equaled ever, yes. Really. Like,
pretty crazy. Jay, before I let you go, Giro starting tomorrow. Any wild predictions for us?
Well... I think, to be honest, I think Jai Hindley is getting a bit of a bit low in the betting markets. Like, yes, last year's Giro was a bit funky, but I think he doesn't go into this Giro not protecting his GC like he did last year. Who else? I think I could be eating my words here. Evenepoel is a bit high on the odds.
Well,
we haven't seen
has
him
he
race
raced?
At all.
Yeah, I was about to say, has he raced? I haven't seen him.
This is his debut race after his crash. Like, if we're talking last year's Giro, without a doubt, one of the favourites going into the race. But for the first race back, like, he's obviously not going there, not in form. Like, the Koenig's not doing that. But I don't see him being that high on the odds in the betting markets for the first race. It's just bizarre to me.
It's tough to get that race sharpness without actually racing. And such a big gap. It's like he's had a 12-month off season.
Yeah, but like there's so many factors. Like, this is a really hard Giro. Like, the last 2 days before the time trial, stage 19 and 20, they are brutal. We're not talking, having an off day and losing 15 seconds, you can make that up in the time trial. We're talking you're losing a couple of minutes if you're on an off day there, which you're not making back up in the time trial. And it's his first Grand Tour. He's coming back from an injury where, let's be honest, he basically fell from the third story of a building onto his hip.
It was crazy.
Like, it's ridiculous. Like, for him to get a top five in this Giro would be phenomenal. But I think his odds are too short. You know,
I also think for a kid, it's a lot of pressure. Like, he's still a kid. Like, I don't even know what I was doing with that age. I was like drinking cans in the park.
Yeah, I know, but I think he's so mature though. Like, the way he rides in the bunch, like last year was just ridiculous. You could see the command that he had, and he almost thrives off that wolf pack mentality of Quickstep. Like, he's a really good rider. I don't get me wrong, I think he will win a Grand Tour one day, but I don't think it's going to be this year.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely an interesting 3 weeks. The Giro is always my favorite race because it's just so chaotic. The Tour, it's amazing because it's the Tour and it's romantic, but the Giro is just crazy finishes. And then you chat to the riders, and they're also pissed off at the long transfers and the shit hotels. And it's just a crazy, crazy race.
Yeah, the gravel stage is going to be phenomenal. Like that. Cadel Evans' win from, I think it was 2010.
It was amazing.
That is one of the best Giro stages ever. And to bring it back, like, people don't like gravel in Grand Tours. Yes, I think gravel on the 20th day at the top of a mountain where there's no neutral service, what happened to Richie last year in the Tour, is a bit shit. But having an actual gravel stage early on in the Tour, I think it's a good way to define an all-round cyclist. Just as much as you need a team time trial every once in a while, you need downhill finishes. I think a bit of gravel and a bit of cobblestone is good.
It's just amazing for spectators as well.
Absolutely.
Like, when you're looking at it, you pick out these key, and often this is the way, though, the difference between spectators and riders, because the stages I'll pick out as a spectator are probably the same stages that 90% of the peloton are looking at and going, oh fuck, I'm not looking forward to that day, because that's dangerous, absolutely, because that's scary, because that's difficult,
mate. Everyone, like, so right now I'm really looking forward to that gravel stage, but if I was in that race, I'd really not be looking forward to that gravel stage. You know, but yeah, I mean, that stage, we could be talking going into week two already with one of the GC guys having a clear command of the race. And I think Bernal is going to be unstoppable. Like, just watching him at Strada, I think that stage will show up a bunch of the contenders.
He looks a lot better this year. Last season, it seems like he got... You find this a lot with guys the year after they win the Tour. Geraint Thomas had the same thing, where he struggled the year after he won the Tour, I think, with the expectation and then balancing all the extra media stuff on top of that. But I followed Bernal on Strava the year after his Tour de France. He was putting in the craziest fucking training rides I'd ever seen. Like, he was doing 8-9 hour endurance rides, like, you know, not... you know, pretty occasionally. It was insane, the volume he was putting in. It just seemed like somebody who was just more is better, panicking to compound, you know, the gains they already had. And just, he looked like a fellow with the weight of the world on him in the Tour de France last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, coupled with the Slovenians, just crazy, crazy in those punchy, easy. 6% for 15 kilometers with punchy finishes. I mean, Bernal's not that type of rider. He needs some altitude. He needs some steeper climbs. It was tailored to the Slovenians last year. Really?
Yeah, for sure. Jake, thanks for catching up. We're going to hopefully catch up again. You know, we'll give it a bit of time to get a few more races under you and continue our little life as a neo-pro section, which I'm quite enjoying.
Yeah, definitely. I love talking cycling as well. So, yeah, I'm happy to keep coming on.
Also, it's like I get to kind of live vicariously through you without any of the hard work. So it's pretty cool.
Well, there's a lot of hard work. So I'll take that one for the team.
Cheers, Jay. Thanks for chatting.
Cool.
Hey everybody, it's Anthony again. Really quick, I want to invite you to join arguably the best thing I've ever put out inside the Roadman community. It's a challenge. It's a challenge called the 14-day Kickstart Challenge. So regardless of where your fitness is at right now, this is going to be the catalyst for making you faster and making you leaner. I've created this challenge to take the guesswork out of everything. It's 14 days of training plans, regardless of what your level is. There's masters, beginner, advanced. There's meal plans, shopping list, and even a video course holding your hand and talking you through it all. So what I recommend you do right now is just stop everything, press pause on this audio, and go to roadmancycling.com/14-day or check out the link in the bio. That's roadmancycling.com/14-day.